And welcome to today's show. My name is Paul Holmes, and with me, as usual, is John Jurisic.
The father of blankety blank.
The godfather.
There's only going to be a few people that understand what that means.
No, I...
You have a few that have listened to our other 20 podcasts.
I think we should start over, because I don't think anybody gets that anymore.
Ah, keep going. I'm the father of something.
Founding father, correct. Yes, sorry. So today we are at the fabulous Shatterbox Coffee House here in downtown Victoria, across from where London Drugs is. And man, what a cool location.
Massively cool.
Yeah.
I friggin' love it here, and everyone in Victoria should be coming here for coffee.
How is the coffee, John?
I'm not being sponsored for saying that. It's probably the best coffee I've had in my life.
Really?
Yeah.
There, you've heard it here first, folks. So we want to give a shout out to the good folks at Shatterbox for letting us invade their location.
And we'll
this morning.
Be here again.
Yeah. This is a great spot. So with us today, we have a number of Victoria City Council candidates, and we also have a campaign manager for one of the mayoral campaigns. And these people all have something in common. And it's that
they're very different from me.
They're all under 40. So thanks. Welcome all of you for
you're welcome
there.
For being under 40. It
was are you under 40?
Or? I am.
Okay, good. Yeah. The great thing about radio, you can just lie to death about what you look like.
Got a Grecian in the beard.
Remember the gray guy that ran for American Idol, and what was his name? You remember that? And he had to be under 30 to be on American Idol, and nobody believed that he was under 30 because he was a full head of gray hair.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That was a few years back.
Was that you?
I'm dating myself. Yeah, it was me. So I'm just going to go around the table here.
Hard hitting already.
Before people start leaving, I'm going to go around the table here and just introduce people. And if you want to say a few words, and maybe what inspired you to run for council? I'll start on my left, and we have with us Ian Hoare. He was with CTV behind the camera for 7 years, and now works with local tech leader MetaLab. And you have thrown your metaphorical hat into the ring.
Yeah, it was funny being behind the scenes at CTV for so many years. I got to see a lot of the players when the camera stopped rolling. So it was nice to, you know, talk to Dean in his office when the camera wasn't rolling and he wasn't trying to be political. And I kind of got to see people's motivations a little bit. And I didn't meet everyone. And of course the players have changed a little bit, but it gave me a good taste for how politics works in Victoria. After that, I decided that industry is a little belly up. I went to school again. I went to Camosun and retrained for tech and became an iOS developer at MetaLab. I came to politics out of my commute, actually. I walk from my house in Chinatown to my job on Langley Street. And walking past stores that are, you know, right on the edge of shutting down, and maybe the few homeless folks that ask me for money each morning, talking and sharing ideas and habit when I go to work. It really lets me reflect on who the movers and the shakers are in Victoria, and also that we maybe have a problem in Victoria with our business health and our health of our street population. So I think if I just sort of reflect on that four or five blocks that I walk to work and look around me, what the changes of Victoria are what compelled me to say something needs to change here.
Great. Well, welcome to the show, Ian. And next up we have Sonia Thoreau. And Sonia is a communications consultant who is currently campaign manager for the Lisa Helps mayoral campaign. So what inspired you to get involved?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, to be honest, before I was asked to be on this campaign, the extent of my exposure to Victoria politics was really a daily scan of the Times columnist. I wouldn't say that I was incredibly immersed. I wasn't attending council meetings and all that. And so really what drew me wasn't so much the area-specific issues in Victoria, although there are many of those. But I mean, I'm not running for office. I needed to be inspired to give my life over to somebody else running for office. And what really drew me in was the opportunity to change the nature of engagement in a campaign so that other sorts of people would be attracted to campaigning. So, I mean, we keep asking ourselves, what are the issues that young people need to be talking about, and or what will hook them in? You know, is it food security? Is it global climate change? And I think that in a way we're missing the mark there. I think it's something a bit more fundamental. It's about how we've organized the machine itself. I think it's how we're addressing the problems themselves, not only the problems. And I think that, I mean, what we know from an academic perspective is people don't get engaged if they don't see themselves reflected in the system. And so not only do young people not see themselves in the individuals running for office, but I think they just don't see themselves in the fundamental principles underlying the system. And, you know, not to blanket generalize all young people.
But, well, I don't think, and we'll get into it, I'm sure, later on, but it's not just young people.
It's not people, just young people, exactly.
When you have a sub 30% turnout for an election, it speaks to the health of that system, right?
It absolutely does,
But we'll get back to that. My goodness, I'm chomping at the bit this morning with 4 hours sleep. We have Ryan Moen, who's also running for Victoria Council and is a registered massage therapist. So, Ryan, tell us what inspired you to run.
Well, I'd like just to think that you talked about youth, but we're also the people that are looking to invest in the city in the future, and if not the cities that are going to work best for us. And I don't think there's any reason that Victoria shouldn't be that ideal situation where you want to live, work, and play. However, just due to my occupation, I have a pretty good pulse on how people are affected with the economy, and right now everybody's getting pushed. The affordability in the city is down, and that's a good presentation of a problem. So as a council, I'm aiming to actually get down to the root of the issues and see what we can do to make plans that are actually feasible to change this, because I think there's a bit of complacency with the city right now. And I think there's an idea that maybe Victoria's always been vibrant, it always will be vibrant, but the four lease signs and all the storefronts out here, it's a big sign that there's a change and there's need for change to reverse that.
Great. Well, welcome, Ryan. Thank you. And finally, at the table today, we have Jeremy Loveday, who was with the Heart and Stroke Foundation and Victoria's Voices.
Yeah, Victorious Voices, as in winning.
Victorious.
Yes.
Victorious Voices. So what inspired you, Jeremy, to run for Victoria's City Council?
Well, you mentioned Victorious Voices. That's a youth arts festival and outreach program that I've ran for the last 5 years. I grew up here. I love this city. And when I moved back 5 years ago, that was the idea. The idea was to start something that was missing when I was a youth, and that was this youth outreach program. Because when I was a teenager, I really could have used some positive, creative outlets, and so that was that's what brought me. Well, I came back for my family, but that's what I knew I was going to do, and I started that. And that's really been a process of providing platforms for young people to be heard and to amplify their voice. And I think, so that's what I've been doing. I've been doing that. I've been speaking out about important issues. And from that point, I've...
That's okay. It's okay. We'll edit. No problem. Yeah, don't worry. No, it's a thing. it's a burn. Thing. And so no sweat. Just keep going and we'll take care of it.
Should I just start again?
Give him a second. I'll just finish up.
Yeah, you just finish
I'll
up.
I'll just chop out that last
He's minute. An amazing editor.
Start with the issues.
Except when he really wants to embarrass me.
Yeah.
I think we were just sort of explaining where you were at in the last piece.
Yeah. So I've always been involved in politics. I studied politics in university and history. And through the last few years, through the Youth Outreach Program and through my involvement on the board of the Greater Victoria Cycling Coalition, I've really focused my politics towards community building and towards local issues. And that's what I'm now most passionate about, is the concrete things that City Council does and the way that affects everyday life. And I think it's the most important form of government for people on every day.
Thank you. Thanks to all of you. First of all, I want to say how absolutely courageous it is for each of you and who you represent to be involved. It's a tough job. You're going to get
some negative comments you're going to be talked down to, and it takes...
Just a break coming up now? We're going to get some of those?
Yeah. Okay. No, no, not for me. Not for me. How about before we sort of get into somewhat I'll call youth issues, although I like to think youth is a state of mind, but nonetheless, what are some of the mechanics and numbers behind the size of voter base in Victoria, and how many of those are in this 25 to 40-year-old category, and how many of those voted last time? Can anyone answer that question?
One thing I've been thinking about a lot in my campaign is, you know, of course, sitting behind a computer and doing Facebook politics, you can get maybe 2 or 3 degrees out from where you sit in your social circle. And if you're thinking, you know, hey, I've got 800 Facebook likes and I feel great about that.
So what?
So what?
Yeah, I know.
Exactly. And so unless those people are telling every senior they know, if they're going and door knocking on all of their neighbors who may not care or know who you are, your reach isn't that big. And so for us as young people to sort of sit behind a computer and try and run our campaigns, it's impossible. We need to be out and talking to people. And I think not only reaching the issues that touch us, but figuring out how those really important ones to us touch the yeah. outer ring.
Well, absolutely. And that's, of course, always been, with Paul and I being social media marketers in past lives, this sense that, geez, if you post to Facebook, you've reached the entire community. What a bunch of bull crap that is. But really, in terms of the numbers, do we have a sense? Sonia, okay.
Something like 67,000 eligible voters in Victoria.
Okay.
Just under 27% voted in 2011, so that was about 16,000 people.
Okay.
There is not demographic data on municipal voters, but you can extrapolate from provincial and federal data.
Yeah.
And what we know is, generally speaking, under 40s aren't voting municipally.
Do we have a sense of size of that block?
27,000 under 40 in Victoria.
Wow.
Vote.
They could decide
eligible voters, obviously.
They could decide the election. Under 40s, should they vote as a block? Not that that is what should happen, but could actually decide an election.
Wow.
Municipally.
You guys have the keys to the city.
There you go.
Yeah. But
if we get the vote out.
Well, the problem we're facing is, why don't they?
Yes.
And the two big reasons are, A, they don't know how to vote. I've talked to so many people that say, are you going to vote on the 15th or hopefully on the 10th, the 5th or the 10th of November? And they go, I don't know if I can. I don't know how. Where do I go? That's a big issue, and I think us getting the word out about how to get those people to vote is a huge thing. And then also, they don't know why they should vote. There's no real connection between what a vote cast for a city councilor does versus what the result is at
okay.
the end of that.
I'd like to further on the why. I think the
maybe
best
just,
example...
just because no one will see us? Well, just say who you are.
This is Ryan. Yeah, yeah. This is Ryan running for city council.
Because if I want to vote for you, I got to go, I like that guy's voice.
So when I was speaking to a coworker, I asked her, you know, have you checked out your candidates in your local municipality? She's not a voter in Victoria. And she said, no. And she said, the reason that she doesn't vote municipally and she votes federally and provincially is she just doesn't know if she feels rooted and feels home in Victoria, which I think is indicative of, do you see yourself living here in 10 years? And it's, can you afford to buy properties? Can you afford to see raising a family? Can you afford all these decisions that are being made by this youth at the table right now?
Isn't that kind of defeatist, though? I mean, you know, ultimately...
That's exactly
I guarantee you that this city is not going to be a livable place in the future unless the youth do step up to the plate like you guys
or
have.
Somebody does.
Yeah, and you know, and I'm a guy who's Paul, by the way. I'm a guy who ran when I was 23 years old and got it at the doorstep. Don't you think you're a little too young? And I said at that time, which was a long time ago now.
Yes,
I said at that time. I said, you know what? A council with 8 23-year-olds would be a problem, right? A council where everybody's over 50 is also a problem, right? The council should reflect the demographics of the city, and there is a massive underrepresentation of that under 40 group. And part of it, of course, is, you know, look, if you look a little bit more like me, I'm probably going to be a little bit more inclined to vote for you. And so if I'm a gray hair and, you know, I've retired and I know that somebody's, you know, doing this council thing in their retirement, which is great. Mm-hmm. right? Nothing wrong with that. I'm going to be more inclined to vote for that person because I have a lot more in common with them.
I've got a wig, actually, for my...
Yeah.
according to the numbers Sonia identified, you don't need a wig.
Yeah.
You just need people to mark X.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I think that's the issue. And speaking to exactly what Ryan said, you know, if the young people don't believe that they have a future in Victoria, then... You know, you're giving up, right? And I'm glad that you guys around the table don't feel that way.
And I agree with you, and I think that is a defeatist attitude. However, that's why we're coming here with actual feasible platforms. And I think that's the thing that's the big change, is that I think there's been a lot of kind of rhetoric and just, you know, campaigning based on slogans. But now we're coming together with plans and things to be able to...
Real stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
I just... I want to get one thing off the table, and that's one thing I hear a lot from people. They say youth are apathetic, and it's just, that's not the case. I just want to get that off the table as part of the conversation. You know, through Victorious Voices, I have the honor of hearing lots of teenagers speak very powerfully and with informed opinions on the topics they're passionate about.
I totally agree with you. Yeah. They just, to Ian's point, they don't know how or where they can get things changed necessarily.
And one other thing is that, you know, we're talking about platforms, we're talking about engaging youth in the electoral cycle. I think that if we are going to drive youth voter engagement and youth engagement in civic issues, it has to happen year round, not just in election cycles. Mm. And the city needs to take the leadership on it. It's not just the job of you know, candidates.
Yeah, and I would agree. At, this again, Ryan, but I drop my name every time I get.
That's good. You're in a political election.
I don't think it's apathy at all. It's accessibility. And as far as feasible platforms, you can look in Nanaimo. We seem to always be trailing the city up north. And right after we've done our composting, after they did it, you can look at their e-town hall. It's working to increase not just access to their meetings and council decisions online at real time while they're running their council, but actually drawing people in because they feel like their opinions are being heard.
Yeah, and I think I don't need to say my name because I'm not running, and I'm the only female.
Okay. But if our 12 listeners can't figure out you're the female in the group, then we have another problem to deal with.
I spent some years working at the Gulf Island Films and Television School on Galliano, which was pretty much a media camp for young people, and largely it drew activist-oriented young people. They blew my mind. And I think, if anything, they're just overwhelmed. Like, I have a 12-year-old that worries about the sea level rising. Like, can you imagine your whole life being raised with that, the awareness of all that's going on, because you're on YouTube and on the internet.
So I know.
They're globalized in their consciousness, right? Did you have people, your parents, that put the fear of nuclear war in you?
Well, yeah, a little bit. Sure. Yeah. I mean, that was a huge thing growing up in the 80s, was, you know, this constant threat of nuclear war. You look, everybody our age remembers the Genesis, you know, video with the Ronald Reagan puppets blowing up the world. You know, there's always something. It was acid rain.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have acid rain, a big problem with acid rain anymore, because a whole bunch of people stepped up to the plate and said, let's fix this, right? And, you know, so many problems in the world can be fixed if people just step up to the plate, right?
Which is happening right here in Victoria.
Yeah,
but I think if we create that miasma of this fear, unrest, and despair...
That is such a cool word. And each one of us has to use that word in a sentence.
But if we create this fearful thought, this bubble of, like, you're voting on acid rain and you're voting on nuclear war and tankers and every other issue under the sun, that doesn't necessarily engage young voters. I think if we say, do you like Rifflandia? Then vote. If we say that we have a council that's going to listen to young entrepreneurs like Dimitri at Atomic, and, you know, maybe Shane that owns Habit, and maybe, you know, a dozen shops on Johnson Street, that if we have a council that likes those things and says, hey, these are cool, let's make more things like this, that we don't have the council we have now that's sort of a council of no, or a council of that's against the rules, or a council
or
of...
A council of will study.
Yeah.
Or a mayor of will study.
Yeah.
I'm executive director of something called the Sydney North Saanich Industrial Group,
I work for advocacy issues related to manufacturers' interests out on the peninsula. Their number one issue, because they're hearing from their staff, is a lack of affordable workforce housing. And so I've been bashing that message for better part of 3 years, and it's coming from their employees, who are all young, who can't afford to live out there. And so I was told repeatedly, you are never going to change the paradigm out that way. You will never change it. It's never been changed in North Saanich. It'll never change in Sydney. We changed it. We changed it because enough young people stood up at numerous repeated council meetings and said, enough is enough. Enough is enough. And started to change the tone of what's going on out there. And finally, we have North Saanich breaking out of a friggin' 20-year-old mold of not creating affordable workforce housing. So to your point, to all of you guys' points, stand up and say enough's enough, and things will change.
Well, and just on the affordability question, since you brought it up, because I think that I've felt for a long time that has been the biggest issue in our region, and you know and you guys need to understand, if you don't already, and you guys are all smart people, I'm sure you do. When I was growing up, this was a concern for my generation. I'm not a whole lot older than you guys, and so when you talk about affordability, it's not just the young people; it's the people in their 40s and 30s, 40s, etc., that are also leaving because they can't find a way to live affordably in Victoria. And so it's not just a youth issue, it's actually really just a people issue. Maybe you can speak to that.
And I agree, that's Brian. The thing, everybody looks at us as youth and they talk about renters and they talk about that as far as accessibility, but yes, we're getting squeezed, but so are the homeowners. Their taxes are going up every year, so it doesn't matter. It's not just a single income bracket. If you own a $1 million house, you're getting taxed on that on a percentage. You're not getting a gift or anything like that when the rates go up. Everybody here makes pretty much a set wage throughout there, and that's not increasing, but the inflation on our housing crisis is.
So assuming that we don't all want to see this island to be a getaway for millionaires with their bungalows in the future, and that everybody else has to leave, how do we do that, guys? Sonia, any ideas?
You picked a non-candy.
Yeah,
I picked a non-candy, but I'm a policy nerd.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're limited to a certain extent in municipal policy what you can do about the affordability, because it's market-driven largely. There are definitely certain things that you can do. And
a lot of people want to live here,
yes.
And they're willing to bring their millions of dollars to live here.
And it will take enormous political will to use the policy tools that are available, and I'm not suggesting that my candidate is going to do that, but I'm aware of certain tax incentives, for example, in West Vancouver. Is it West Vancouver? Are you aware of this, John?
No.
But I mean, you have to manipulate the market, and that's very, very
tricky
to do.
Well, not entirely. We've been lucky enough to have some research from across Canada.
Yeah.
There are density-related issues that can directly impact this. Yeah. There are specific zone
yes.
tax-related issues.
Yeah. Secondary suites.
There are yes. Sort of.
John, I don't want to hear about your ideas. Let's hear from.
Across Canada.
No, but you make a good point. There are definitely tools that are in the toolkit, and we've been slow to move on things like secondary suites, and other area municipalities haven't even moved on that yet. But the point being that there needs to be an addressing not only on the affordability side, but also on employment. And in other words, we tend to pay people less in Victoria than elsewhere in Canada for the same work, for example. For sure. So those sorts of things.
Ryan, do you have some policy ideas?
Well, beyond policy, when you're talking about millionaires moving here, I'd like to note that if you look in the uplands, you look into some of our most prominent properties, they're for sale. It's not just unaffordable for the lowest of us that are just scraping by on minimum wage. And I make a decent wage, but my sister here is making a half-decent wage working at Pacific Housing, and she can barely get by. And she has to make those kind of considerations as far as feasibility.
Well, it's the disconnect, right? The wages that you earn here are kind of Canadian average wages, but the costs, of course, are skyrocketing in comparison. Whereas even in Vancouver and Toronto, which we often compare ourselves to, the reality there is that,
those housing prices and the cost of living are somewhat justified in that the wages tend to reflect that more accurately.
Right? Okay, Paul, we want to hear the
Jeremy. Yes.
I'll get in here a little more.
Luckily, as we get more comfortable with this,
you're just going to have to start yakking.
I think there are some concrete things the city can do to improve the amount of affordable housing that there is in the city. And one is secondary suites and laneway houses, and looking at ways we can speed up the process to get those houses. There is a grant, right, to put a secondary suite in that the city has. But there is also a very strenuous process. And I've talked to a lot of people at the doorstep who, you know, they're struggling to pay their mortgage. They'd like to have a secondary suite. And, you know, they're getting flack for it, and it's taking a long time to make it happen. And so now their house is in jeopardy, and there isn't another rental suite in the basement. And there's a lot of also illegal suites. There are a lot of legal suites that need to be brought into the fold. And if we make it easier to do that, then we can get that. We can get the tax dollars from those illegal suites, and also make sure that they're dignified places for people to live.
I agree. And again, it's one of those issues that we start to look at the presentation that we could be doing all these things, but then we've got to ask why. And the reason that Victoria hasn't pushed through a lot of these is because of our aging infrastructure. I know it's not the prettiest, sexiest thing to be talking about, but it's actually our sewer rings and our waters. They've been built in the 1900s. And I've sat down with engineers from the city of Victoria, and this is the people I'm talking to. I'm trying to get feasible answers and actual plans. You want plans, and this is exactly it. We need to upgrade. Most times in the spring and in the fall, we end up with these bursted water mains. Sonia's got something to say.
Before we get into that, and you're right, there's a national infrastructure crisis in this country, because there's so much municipal infrastructure all over the country that hasn't been upgraded for 100+ years.
Cast iron. Yeah.
Oh yeah. But let's let Ian first weigh in on affordability.
I grew up, and I was very lucky to get into co-op housing when I was a kid. So we lived in Fernwood on Gladstone. I think the rent was, you know, around $400 for the family of three. And we were lucky to we didn't get into Blanchard Courts, but we were very close to getting into there. And I think my childhood could have been very different had I lived there. So we were in this brand new construction co-op housing in Fernwood. My mom was a single parent nurse. Going to UVic at the time as well. Managed to get her bachelor's degree while feeding two giant boys. If you can see a picture of me, I'm huge, and the grocery bills were disgusting. So, but I think if we're talking about trying to include the people in our community that can barely make it, we're going to push people off the bubble if they can't quite. So if we say, even if we talk about the municipality, if people can't live here, they move to a cheaper municipality, and we lose that tax base. And I think if we're going to have that bar set so high, we're really cutting away our market for succeeding businesses, for any kind of, like,
you know, sustainable communities trying to get cycling
infrastructure that isn't a huge priority when we don't have lower income families. The other thing is, like, we don't have great accessibility to transit for lower income families. So it's like, you know, places like Berlin, for instance, you know, a transit pass for the month is $30. It goes everywhere. You're never more than like 500 steps away from a metro. We charge maybe, what is it, $80 for a monthly bus pass, and it's like they come every hour and they don't really go everywhere you want to go.
I live in Souk, and so I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
There's no way you're getting to Victoria without driving a car and keeping your sanity. So let's shift gears, guys, and talk about the miasma of the infrastructure.
Lovely miasma weather we're having today.
Do you know what that even means?
Not a chance.
It's a foul odor, apparently.
Kind of like boondoggle. So,
and if you have a miasma coming off your water infrastructure, that's a really big problem.
We got nice water here, though. I like our water.
It's true. Even though the rates are going up again. Sonia, you had some thoughts around the infrastructure deficit here.
Well, in a way, my thoughts were tying back to what I was saying at the beginning around how we have fundamental systemic problems. When I think of the infrastructure problem, we literally don't plan for how to budget for our critical infrastructure and our capital project. That's literally what's next, what's in front of us. It's a big part of why we boondoggled the bridge.
Yes.
But I think that what housing and secondary suites and infrastructure all have in common generally, and frankly something like Rifflandia, is even that which we are doing at the city, for example, allowing secondary suites, and Jeremy touched on this, is far too difficult, far too lengthy, far too complicated, and not predictable. It costs people so much money and stress that, as Jeremy already noted, it causes people to go underground with what they're doing often. And all of that speaks to the fact that our bureaucracies in general, not just City of Victoria, it's not a Victoria problem, it's not a Dean Fortin problem, but generally all of our bureaucracies function in a way that absolutely doesn't meet the needs for the change that we need today.
Mm.
And I mean, in a nutshell, our soundbite, frankly, is it's a siloed think tank organization. It's not an action-oriented project system, and that is what we need to be doing at City Hall.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree.
I like good infrastructure. I like the idea. I mean, maybe our bridge wasn't done properly, but if we have world-class architecture in our city, it makes our city a destination. And it makes, you know, we're thinking of our extremely successful two industries, tech and tourism. If people are coming here to see, like, wow, look at how cool this city looks. Look at, like, you look across the harbor and you see an amazing, architecturally beautiful bridge. That is a good thing.
Well, people want to come here already, right?
Yeah, and you need prioritize.
I mean right. visitors love Victoria. I have never been anywhere in this world where I've met somebody who didn't have an inkling of Victoria and some idea that they wanted to come here one day, right? And that's that's awesome, but also a bit problematic when we talk about the island turning into a haven for millionaire bungalows, right?
I think if we talk about if we make the priorities, like Sonia was saying, that we should probably list the priorities and say where does a new architecturally beautiful bridge fall on our list of priorities, and maybe it's not at the top, and so we should probably go through the list. but on the other hand, you know, things like
but on the other hand, if it's falling apart,
exactly,
people will die in the water.
One of the things I love about the bridge is that it's a connector from this side of the harbor onto the Galloping Goose.
Mm-hmm.
That was sorely lacking before.
Yeah, and this bridge, the new bridge, has much better cycling infrastructure,
walking
infrastructure.
And it'll make a perfect connection down Pandora and hopefully up Johnson at some point.
But the point is, we didn't have the option of only this bridge or the crumbling current bridge.
Like, beautiful. I thought Sonia was going to be combative with the infrastructure, but that's exactly it. Yeah. It was never a good topic to say we're going to spend money maintaining the bridge, and so they just kept on letting it go way after way after way. We're not talking the last 3 years, not the last 5 years. We're talking the last 40 years. This bridge was mirrored off the same construction as one down in California, just outside of San Francisco, and they planned ahead. They made sure there was a dockyard, just like the one we have in Esquimalt, to support their local labor. They could dismantle the bridge, maintain it appropriately, and we could have done the exact same thing. However, they just let it go so that it wouldn't cost money in the present. So they don't actually look ahead as far as making sure that the budget isn't going to affect the future generations. And if you look at our 2014 on budget in the city, look at 2016, look at 2018, look at the budgets they push forward into this next electoral kind of sector, and they're just making sure that they can budget just enough to get by and make the numbers look good for today.
They do. So really? They absolutely do. There's no priority plan for infrastructure investment whatsoever.
Oh, it's horrible. It goes up from
I wouldn't budget my personal life.
They're really shocked.
2016, they're planning. So we need to improve our tech sector. So they threw a random number, 2016, not 2015, because it would be unpopular the year after to boost the budget and have to increase taxes. 2016, they're charging $1 million, random number put out there, towards the IT. No actual ramification, but they're just tacking these bills on way into the future so that the future generation is going to have to pay for that. So we talk about the tax base. Look at the planning. It's all there in the numbers, and it's completely unaffordable.
I do think that having a four-year election cycle rather than a three-year election cycle can hopefully help alleviate that, because
long as we have a diversity of council members.
Exactly.
Sure. One of the three of you, and hopefully this mayor, get on.
No. He's only all three. That's
the thing. In a perfect world, I'd be happy with that. But I'm trying to be rational here. Okay, I'd like to deal with something, the real elephant in the room, so to speak, okay, that at my age group, and for all of those who can't see me, I'm in my late 80s. Nonetheless.
Looking good.
You're my stand-in for my senior home visit.
Yeah, I run a fitness business. Okay, so that being, they're too young. They're too young. They shouldn't be on council.
I haven't heard that.
They're too young.
Really?
We hear that.
They're too young. They shouldn't be doing blah, 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 which I think is a bunch of bullshit.
Well, I wonder if it's a different attitude towards a mayoral candidate. Although, you know, I think that's ridiculous because Lisa's not that many years younger than I am. She's technically under 40.
Yes. She's actually a little younger than me.
Tell me how you deal with that.
The women down at Beckley Manor, when they're fundraising, and I told them, hey, I'm thinking about running. What do you guys need as far as a voice? They said, it's about time that some young people took initiative. They were so behind me. They wanted my voice to be out there because they knew that I'd be taking care of myself for the next 50 years in this city because I'm thinking long term because I want to make this city livable for myself and my children. Don't have a wife or kids right now, but they want to make sure that it actually works. And that's when they look at me, they see that as a feasible future.
That's fantastic. Go ahead, Jeremy.
I also haven't had anyone say that yet on the doorstep. I have had it said to my volunteers when they're door knocking on my behalf. When it's face to face, they can look you in the eye. They can see that you're for real, that you're authentic, and they can make that.
I'm
connection.
Really glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're a non swearing podcast,
are we?
But if ever there was,
I didn't know there was swearing.
An appropriate time to swear, I would call the notion that having somebody young on council absolute BS. There is no.
Well, you can say it all you like, but it's out there.
So
we
but
had
what
deal
kind
with
of
it.
A you know? Well, yeah, you're right. You're right. And you know, damn.
Okay,
go ahead.
One of the things that I find interesting is the concept of a career politician, somebody whose existence is to get reelected.
Right.
And I think if we're talking about councillors that have been in council for 25 years or, you know, longer than when you first tried to run, that's dangerous. You know, you get somebody that worries about the next time this issue is going to come up and they're going to get elected. I am kind of happy to come at it from an engineering perspective and to say, let's do as much for this region and for this municipality as possible. And hopefully there comes an opportunity where I can fall on my sword and make a decision that changes for the better, but maybe isn't politically sexy.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know, I come back to this diversity, right? You need new people. You need experienced people, right? I think an ideal council is going to be representative of that, you know, of the community, right? So, Sonia.
Essentially, I was going to agree because, I mean, what we come up against a lot on this campaign is the notion of experience and what the right experience is and what's enough experience. And it seems to be coming from a very narrow scope of the experience that should bring any politician into office. The notion being that either you're a career politician or you're an MBA, frankly. Not a farmer, not a small business owner, not a tech designer, and it speaks to how narrow we view political leadership in general in terms of what your background should be.
So, yeah,
I mean, 20 years in adulthood in career, and if it hasn't come from a certain area of our culture, it tends to be just dismissed as not relevant.
Well, I'd like to note that as far as youth goes, I mean, we're not squeak teen years old. We're all educated, hardworking professionals that are integrated in our community. When you look at us, it's not that we're not out there making real decisions based on this, you know, economy, or are we going to buy housing? Are we going to make a shift in our career to other cities? It's not like we're out there and just hopeful with good ideas. We're here with good plans, and I think that's what needs to be heard, not just our age.
I was basically going to say
the same thing. So was I.
At 32, it is not often people consider me a youth anymore. This is pretty much the only arena where people are, you know, come at it from that direction. You know, I've ran a youth outreach program for 5 years. I've, you know, been on the board of advocacy organizations and, you know, community groups. And so it's like, I think there is that combination of experience and new energy and fresh ideas that young candidates can bring.
Our community, talking from someone who's helped build it, needs one hell of a lot of help. We're rapidly going bankrupt. We're lacking new ideas. And we need you folks to get involved. And you are getting involved. And so this thing about not having enough experience is wrong. you have enormous amounts of life experience and a community experience.
Well, I come back to the same thing I said about, you know, representing the community.
Yes.
They, you know, the fact of the matter is you're not going to find somebody in their mid-20s or early 30s that has 20 years experience at much. And so should that disqualify people? Well, no, it absolutely should not disqualify people, but you still want to have some of those yes. people that have those 30 yeah. or 40 years
well,
of experience.
Well, sometimes those could be staff.
You know, you
there's
want
a lot of staff you that want, are paid to well, do that's these true. Things.
You want a, representation yeah. should reflect the population.
Well, the key know, thing, but the key thing is, and I think you hit the nail on the head, the key thing is leadership, right? You need leaders. Mm-hmm. And leadership is not something that comes necessarily with age. It comes with you know, more attitude and personality.
This is something that comes up in tech a lot, but when you... For instance, if you were sitting down to hire somebody and they said, I've been at company X for 30 years, and somebody else comes along and I said, I've been at company Y for 2 years, and I'm looking for something better, does it necessarily make the person that's been there for 30 years a better employee? What do you think they were doing for the last 25 years of their employment? It's probably like, you know, maybe they were phoning it in. Maybe they were taking long lunches and, you know, going home early. I feel like the person that is actively seeking to new experience and to revitalize something is a good quality. It's something where we need this churn a little bit to...
Big time.
Yeah, you don't want to bring in, you know, a green city planner that with 2 months experience to run your city necessarily, but you do want somebody that is... constantly looking for new and creative opportunities yeah. to make things yeah. better.
Fresh eyes. Yeah. Guys, we're gonna wrap up. But what I'd like to do again is go around the table in reverse this time, starting with Jeremy. A couple of minutes. First of all, how do people find out more about you? Maybe touch on an issue and or something you want to say in conclusion. Jeremy.
All right. First thing, I do want to mention one thing that we didn't bring up, and that's one really cool thing about this election that hasn't happened in the past is that we have, there is a special poll at UVic. So it's an early voting on Thursday, November 6th. And so there is, hopefully that will boost voter turnout from from university students who live in Victoria. And it's for, I believe there's Victoria Saanich and Oak Bay all have early voting polls there.
Okay.
So that is a good thing. I've been knocking on a lot of doors, been talking to a lot of people, and it, from what I hear from almost across the board is that people are ready for young people and new leadership on city council, and I'm
real
ready.
Elections are won or lost on the doorstep, so this is really good to hear.
That's what we're going for. We're trying to knock on every door in the city, and got a lot of... I'm really excited that, you know, we've got a bunch of volunteers. Most of them are under 40. Most of them have never worked on election campaigns before, and they're excited. They're excited to help build a better city, and I'm excited to do that with them. And I'm excited to help build a more affordable, sustainable, and vibrant Victoria for myself and for generations to come.
God, I'm voting for you.
There we go. All right. www.jeremyloveday.ca.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeremy. And Ryan.
All right. Well, the thing is that we talked a lot about the youth vote, and we talked about getting youth out there. But as much as getting on social media, like Ian suggested, is important to get everybody involved, and that has targeted the youth, I haven't targeted my platform solely for that. I've developed a platform around fact-based decision-making for all of Victoria. Like we talked about, an entire demographic is being pushed away, and I want to make sure that we can all stay here in Victoria for as long as we feel it is our own home. And you can reach me at www.ryanmohan.com or phone me personally at 250-888-8441.
Well, hell with it. I'm voting for you as well.
Oh, give me a text.
John, get serious. You need to be door knocking for them.
I can't. My knees don't work like that anymore.
Phone canvassing.
Yeah, we've done enough of that. Yeah. So, Sonia, final thoughts.
Well, what I'm looking forward to, especially if some of these guys get on council as well, is just a general willingness to look at issues without drawing lines in the sand all the time. I think a big part of the problem why we don't arrive at good, sustainable decisions and solutions is because we tend to look at everything with right, wrong, us, them, if you're pro-business, you're anti-community, that sort of thing, without recognizing the interdependencies of all of these things. So if we get a few minds that are able to grasp that effortlessly, I think we're going to see a whole host of initiatives in the city take off in 2015. And Lisa would love to lead that charge. If you would like to learn more about Lisa, you need to go to lisahelpsvictoria.ca and vote November 5th, 10th, or 15th.
Great. If I could vote three times, I would. I'm voting for Lisa.
Vote early, vote often.
Yeah, no. You got to pick one, I think.
Lisa and I are very lucky, and I guess Jeremy as well. Ryan, maybe a little bit, but we have very recognizable last names. So if you're looking for me out there, just vote HOAR, H-O-A-R. It's an easy one to remember. I hope people are engaged this time, and I hope that at very least what I can do is engage a population that is the under 40 crowd. If it means that that isn't a big enough slice, that's okay. It's made me more connected in the process, and hopefully any of us, if we don't get elected, could go to a council meeting and be more involved in our community and hopefully make those changes. I think Victoria is run or is vital because of small groups that are doing very exciting things. Victoria Public Market is a great example of that. Just a group of people doing something very cool. And so I think by empowering those people, reducing the municipal drag on those idea people and the creative people in our community, that we can empower them to make the changes in Victoria that we need. We need sort of a kickstart of prosperity in our communities, and the less that we're racing towards the bottom in terms of making things as cheap as possible for everyone. When we all feel prosperous, we then can invest in those things that we need, like infrastructure and communities that are integrated with our homeless and things like that. So hopefully people vote for me, because I will be a pragmatic member of council and somebody that will be able to look creatively at the problems that are facing Victoria. And you can go to my website. It's votehorror.ca.
I'm voting for you.
You can go to my website. It's votehorror.com.
I want you all on.
Are you voting for me?
If I could, I would.
So thanks again, Ian, yeah. Ryan. It's Ian Hoare, Ryan Moen, Jeremy Loveday. And, I'll go against Ian's last comment there, because I get to speak last. And I would say, if you're listening to this podcast and you are over 40, you need to look at these candidates. You need to look at putting together a diverse group on council. Sure, we've got some great incumbents. Sure, we've got some great people who are older who can represent us. But we need a diverse group. And so I would encourage everybody to have a serious look at these folks. And word of the day was miasma.
Miasma.
You're welcome.
Miasma. Absolutely. We'll figure out what that means in another show. And you just forgot to mention Lisa Helps.
Yes.
Being represented here ably by
Sonia. Of course. Thank you, Sonia Throw, for representing Lisa, and of course we wish Lisa and yourself well as well in the upcoming election. And a final thank you to Shatterbox.
Yeah.
That was a great coffee.
Serves a mean cup of coffee. And
that was amazing.
958 Street, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Check it out. Fabulous.
And we'll be here again, John, Paul, and Mike.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, everyone. Good luck.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.